to build practical sets everywhere we possibly could build them and add a little bit of green screen just helped me as a performer. It was invaluable because there is destruction and debris, twisted metal, concrete. It is everywhere. There's smoke machines. You're coughing legitimately. I mean, you're in it.
That's Dwayne The Rock Johnson talking about his latest film, Rampage. And I'm Neil Rosen, and we're going to talk about Rampage and Truth or Dare, and we're going to talk about Beirut, and I'm going to preview the Tribeca Film Festival on this latest edition of Sitting Around Talking Movies. I'm joined, as always, by Bill Brigoli.
Here I am.
And Bill McCuddy.
It's almost too much show.
And Mike Sargent remotely, but he's still here with us.
Hello. I am here.
There you go.
Sound Although he more. Always seems remote to me.
All right. So we saw Rampage last night. Mike Sargent, Bill McCuddy, and myself.
I love that Dwayne Johnson says there's not much CGI in it, or that they tried to work without much CGI, because this thing is fucking wall-to-wall CGI.
I don't even think the CGI is even that good in certain parts. There's a giant wolf, a giant...
alligator.
King Kong-like gorilla, and some other creature that's bigger than both of those two creatures that comes out from the water.
It's a crocodile. The whole movie's a croc, but it's a crocodile.
And there are parts when Dwayne Johnson's running from this thing, sort of in an Indiana Jones running from the ball kind of situation, where the CGI just looked really bad. What do you think, Mike? Did you think the CGI looked bad?
It depends. I mean, some of it, like certain creatures, the gorilla I thought was done very, very well, which I guess is the main relationship and the main draw of the film. I thought that the alligator, well, it looked like a CGI creation. The wolf super looked like a CGI creation.
Right, the wolf was the worst.
What's that? Yeah, it was pretty bad. I mean, you know, the wolf bred with... a porcupine or something ridiculous. But, I mean, you know, it is what it is. I mean, this is what we see now. I mean,
a piece of shit?
I think that it was a fun film.
I agree with you. Let me first tell everybody what, you know, in a sentence or two, what this is about. I guess
The Rock saves the world.
Dwayne Johnson.
It's about a paycheck for The Rock.
Dwayne Johnson, it starts in San Diego, and they're in some preserve for gorillas, and it comes out that he rescued a gorilla from poachers when poachers killed the gorilla's family.
An albino, a silverback.
Right, which is very rare and very valuable. And he somehow learned to communicate with sign language with this gorilla. And the gorilla has a kind of a weird sense of humor.
Of course it does.
And,
as only a gorilla in a
they
movie.
They become buddies. But there's this evil... which is never really spelled out, this evil company in Chicago that's making this pathogen, you know, that
well, they talk about Spectre or some kind of, like, what are they talking about? Spectre, but like
it's a 007.
Some kind of weird thing that they present in the movie as being real, which is we can genetically edit the gene sequences of animals to make them into super animals, and that the government has called this a weapon of mass destruction. Of course, we've heard about those before, and they haven't been real.
Right. So it's somehow these three animals get affected by this serum.
Well, they're testing it in outer space.
I mean, I have to say that this has been done a million times, okay? In the 70s, they had Food of the Gods, Day of the Animals. They had giant rats in Food of the Gods. I don't know if you remember that. It's to me, it's sort of... A 80s action film meets a 70s horror film with 21st century special effects.
To me, this is King Kong done with
more Mighty Joe Young than King Kong.
Yeah, it is a little more Mighty Joe Young, but they've got that Godzilla versus King Kong thing thrown into when the giant gorilla takes on the crocodile.
Monsters.
You know, it's kind of like a Godzilla.
It turns into Mothra versus Godzilla.
Yeah, it's Godzilla versus King Kong.
By the way...
And King Kong is climbing, instead of the Empire State Building, this gorilla named, I believe it's George?
George.
Right, George is climbing the
Sears... George of the Jungle?
Is it the Sears Tower in Chicago?
No, it's a made-up building in Chicago. I'm from Chicago. They just decided...
Okay, it's a very tall building in Chicago.
It's a very tall building with an antenna on the top that in...
It's the McCuddy Building.
In the morning, they had their engineers retool in order to send out a beam that could be heard all the way around the world, including in a 747.
Yes.
Well,
right.
That, first of all, I got to say, if they got that kind of technology, why aren't they making money with that?
By the way, one other thing I want to point out is, yes, the animals are grossly oversized. However, if you've been in the West 4th Street subway here in Manhattan, the rat is actual size.
Right.
Well, actually, I will tell you size. That, you know, this movie is geared to a 12-year-old audience. And I think, you know, when I was a kid.
So you loved it?
When I was a kid, I was very excited to see King Kong versus Godzilla and all that kind of crap that they used to have. Where, like Bill just said, Mothra versus Godzilla.
Right, Godzilla.
Or whatever. You remember that SCTV skit, by the way, when they had one of those? That wasn't Mothra. It was another one of those kind of Japanese monsters. And he went on a talk show. It was a very funny premise. But Grogan. Oh, you're so funny, Grogan.
My next guest is Grogan.
So I think if you're 12 to 14 years old, 11 years old, I think you'll really dig the movie. I mean, for that audience, which is, it's not made for an adult, sophisticated audience. If you want to see, like, you know, these three giant creatures tear up Chicago, I think you'll have fun. And then they beat the shit out of each other, these things. And Dwayne Johnson is kind of wooden in this. You know what I mean?
Dwayne Johnson wooden. What a
you know, very stoic.
What a revelation.
Well, I mean, you know, but you got to understand, this is the kind of thing that he does. I mean, what does his character have that defines him from any other Dwayne Johnson character?
And he's an executive producer on this, as a matter of fact.
No, it is a typical.
The only difference is he's friends with a gorilla in this.
Yeah.
And who's the two evil.
Mal and Ackerman is their brother and
right,
sister.
Right, Mal and Ackerman, the one from the remake of The Heartbreak Kid from the.
Right. Right. She doesn't look very good with dark hair and, like.
No.
Right.
I don't mean to be cruel, but, like, she doesn't look hot.
Listen,
sorry.
Not for me, although I will say that, you know, for these kind of movies, which we're going to be inundated with over the next few months in the summer, these action things, you know, for what it is. It's fine. You know, it's okay. I didn't find myself wanting to run out of the theater.
I guess I like my stupid movies smarter. I mean, what I mean by that is a couple of good one-liners. There are no good one-liners in this. Everything that's supposed to be a joke falls really flat.
Yeah, it's true.
Well, you know, it kind of opens that way where we have these characters that are in, like, the first act that we never see again throughout the rest of the film. And the dialogue is, you know, enormously mediocre.
Bill Bregoli, do you have, since you did not see this, hearing the
do you have an opinion?
Talking about this, do you have any interest in going to this whatsoever or seeing this?
Not really.
Not really.
You know what you should see and is much smarter, and I really want to press it this weekend.
Mothra
I've talked
King
about
Kong.
A couple of
well,
times.
I do have one thing I could say, Bill, that might make you want to see it, but it's kind of a spoiler, so you can tune away for a second. The Wolf Can Fly.
Of course, the wolf can fly.
Yeah, that's what Dwayne.
that's what Dwayne
said
in the trailer. So it's not.
Can
a
we talk about an?
Mike,
can we talk about an intelligent movie that you and I have both seen called Beirut, the Tony Gilroy, Brad Anderson film?
Oh, please. You want to lead? I loved it. I really loved it.
Well, it turns out Tony. I think the backstory is just as interesting as the movie.
First
it turns
of all,
out
tell everybody who Tony Gilroy is.
Well, I will. Thank you. I was just
Dan
about
Gilroy's
to speak.
Brother.
Maybe if I let somebody speak, they'll tell you. Tony Gilroy has written. Some of my favorite scripts and directed a few movies, among them Duplicity, which is much better than it deserves, and a little something called Michael Clayton. He writes really strong characters, and he wrote this script 27 years ago. All kinds of people have been attached or interested in it, but now John Hamm and Rosamund Pike comes. It has a lot of twists in it, and I know what you're thinking, a twisty Rosamund Pike movie. Uh-oh. But no, this is not anything like we've seen her in before. She has a serious part. John Hamm is, when the movie opens in the early 70s, is living in Beirut. He's kind of a, how would you describe him, Mike? He's kind of a, he works at the embassy. He's kind of a connected guy.
Well, he's a connected guy. He's a negotiator who, let's just say, he something happened. I don't want to give it away completely. That made him stop negotiating, and now he's doing as low-level negotiating as you could get, where he's negotiating between labor unions and businesses now.
Right. We should say he's
super connected, you know, major negotiator for foreign powers.
Right. He's in Beirut, and then for a reason we won't give away, he's suddenly in Massachusetts somewhere, and it's 10 years later. And
how long is he in? How long is the movie's called Beirut? How much of the movie presented?
Okay, calm down, Neil. Calm down with these questions. He's like the shiny object. What, squirrel? He's in Beirut at the beginning. For a minute or two, he's in Massachusetts, and then someone from the State Department comes to him in a bar, where I'd like to send you right now. And they say, for a compelling reason, you have to come to Beirut. John Hamm says, there's no way I'm ever going back to Beirut. And then he's told a reason why he should. And he does. He gets on the plane and goes back. So to answer your question, about 80%, maybe 85% of the movie, 88% would match the Rotten Tomatoes rating, by the way, for this film. But about 85% of the movie is in Beirut. And every scene is gasp-worthy. The thing moves like a well-oiled machine. I wish all action movies were this smart. Mike?
Well, I agree with you. And, you know, I have to say, because Gilroy is someone who sometimes he's great. When he knocks it out of the park, he knocks it out of the park, like a Michael Clayton. Sometimes other things that I didn't think as much of Duplicity or State of Play as I did of, let's say, Nightcrawler, you know. I didn't think much of The Great Wall, but I thought this was great. This is kind of a return to you know, what really made him. He cut his teeth writing stuff like The Bourne Identity and Proof of Life.
He was also called in to fix the last Star Wars movie, right?
Yeah, he was called in to fix the last Star Wars movie. But what I think, like you said, I think it's a very intelligent film. It's intelligent and has something. Just recently I was discussing this with the screenwriter for the other movie, A Quiet Place. Where, you know, you gotta, to really buy something, even if it's an impossible thing, you really got to buy the characters, you know, understand emotionally where they're going, why they're doing what they're doing. And you do understand this character. You understand this character emotionally. It's a fairly simple setup, but it works. You buy it. You see
it's why. Got great action.
To explain to you. You just get it.
It reminded me of like a Jack Ryan film almost.
How do you think? How do you think John Hamm did? I mean, you know, John Hamm.
I think it's the best thing he's done since Mad Men, easily.
And is this?
Well, yeah, and I liked it better. I didn't think it was as showy or as gimmicky a role as he did in Baby Driver.
Oh right, no, it's completely different from that.
Do you think this movie will do well?
I think this movie would have done better 20 years ago. I think it'll do decently. But I think it's a movie that, you know, adults don't go to the movies like they used to. So this is a movie that will have a long life when it's on, you know, cable and on demand and whatnot, because it's a good, solid, intelligent thriller.
Well, I hope it finds an audience this weekend. And I can tell you that if it had come out at the end of last year, I'd have advocated it to be in the Oscar mix. And I don't know if it's going to happen this year because it's way too early. But it's on my top 10 list already.
This sounds up your alley, Bill.
It does.
It puts Hamm in another category. Like, yeah. You realize, okay, he's not a one-trick pony.
This is in the Bill Bregoli staple.
Wheelhouse, let's say.
Movies that he would you would like to see.
Bill, you didn't see this, Bill Bregoli?
No, I didn't get it. No, I didn't get a chance to. But I like Rosamund Pike, and I think John Hamm is doing well in movies now. So. And Tony Gilroy, I remember interviewing him for Michael Clayton once, and he's a smart guy. So
yes.
I want to see what he does.
I really like Rosamund Pike from Gone Girl. I mean, I first.
Yeah, well, as I said, this is twisty, but not in a Gone Girl kind of way. But I mean, there's a lot of blood in it.
I thought she deserved the Oscar for Gone Girl. I mean, because she does like three character transformations in that particular movie, and they're all extremely convincing. And she's good here.
Speaking of extremely.
Not a quick question for McCuddy.
Sure.
Do you like Dan? I mean, do you like him better than his brother Dan's work?
Yeah, I do. I think they're different. I mean, I think...
they are very different.
We should remind people what Dan Gilroy has done.
Oh, Dan Gilroy has done everything from, he did The Bourne Legacy. He did Nightcrawler with him. He did Kong Skull Island, ironically. And then he just did that, you know, noble failure, Roman J. Israel.
Yes.
Then there was Kilroy. Kilroy was here.
And he did Real Steel, which I thought was pretty good.
So listen, that's a smart movie. Tell us how dumb a movie Truth or Dare is.
Well, first of all, I dare you to think it's going to be good, okay? But Truth or Dare is a setup. It's based on the game. It's hard to make a movie like this scary. It's more akin to that movie where people start getting, like, they miss out on death and then death keeps...
Final Destination.
What's that?
Final Destination.
Tell us the premise, Mike.
Right. It's a lot more like Final Destination where, like, you know, when your time comes, your time comes. It's a semi-fun premise. It's exactly what it sets out to be, which is kind of a, you know, today's young horror movie audience kind of thing. It's got appropriate amount of scares. It's got appropriate amount of, you know, kitschy dialogue.
Tell us tell us in a sentence or two the plot of the movie, Mike. I mean,
all right, the plot of the movie is a bunch of kids go on vacation somewhere and they meet a guy because one girl's lonely and she meets this guy. He's a cute guy and he's like, oh yeah, come over to this place. Hey, you never been here? Come to this place and it's great. We'll go play a game in this haunted, empty, abandoned building. And they're like, oh, okay, let's go. And then they go, and then they start playing the game, and then the guy admits to them, I'm sorry, I brought you here because I'm cursed, and now you're cursed too, and you got to play this game, and if you don't play the game, if you don't do Truth or Dare, you're going to die. And that basically is the premise.
And a lot of the Truth or Dares are for horrific things, right?
Well, you know, yes and no. What's interesting about it, and this is sort of what kind of makes it work, is that it's not so much scary as it is the truth.
Stupid.
Okay, how much are you really going to do with Truth or Dare? You know, okay, everybody should just pick truth. But without giving away too much, they give you reasons why sometimes you can't pick truth, and sometimes picking truth is almost worse than the dare. And that has the mark.
Just like real dare. Life.
Didn't we see a movie, Bill, maybe one of you guys can remember this, where there was something where they kept daring these kids to
That's called Would You Rather, where this rich guy invites people to their house and there's like a dinner party.
That's not what I'm thinking of.
One you're thinking about, a young couple where the guy wears like the hipster hat and he's got this hot girlfriend and he invites them to their house, this other couple, and they have to keep doing what the dares
are. I'm thinking of these kids that were doing this thing, and dares kept getting more crazy and more outrageous, and they get in a lot of trouble. I mean, like
it ends at a big, like, thing on Randall's Island or something, and like a big.
I don't know. This premise seems to be like a very.
What's the one with Dave Franco that's like that, where this young couple is like has to do one dare after another?
Yeah, I think I know the one. Yeah, I skipped that one, but yes, I know the one you're talking about. But again, there are a lot of movies like this. It's a setup to kill off some characters and kind of have fun with it. And again, if you like this kind of movie, you will definitely like this. This is absolutely no worse than any of those that you named.
Mike, does the black guy die first?
You know, I don't even know if there is a black guy in there.
So that's even worse. So, or maybe it's not.
So Tribeca Film Festival is coming up. It starts on April 19th and then goes to the end of the month, pretty much near the end of the month. And I'll be covering it for CUNY TV. And by the way, Bill McCuddy, Lisa Rossman, and myself taped two segments of episodes of what used to be called Talking Pictures and is now called Talking Movies. Yesterday, and I will let you know when they will be not only on CUNY TV, but when they will be posted. I will post the links on Twitter so you can watch them.
Dynamite in a box.
And so will Lisa.
The team is back.
And so will Bill McCuddy. And one was a summer preview piece where we go through like about 50 movies that are coming out and tell you what we are looking forward to and what we're not. And the other one, which is going to air like in a couple of months, but it's really good, is we look at 1970s New York movies, love stories. Bill gave it a good title. He called I Love New York in the 70s, or I Heart
New York.
I Heart New York in the 70s. And we look at a whole bunch of really classic New York 70s films when New York was a real different and kind of dangerous place. You remember New York in the 70s,
I looked,
Bill,
for a job here when I was about to get married to a girl from New York, And
you get mugged.
So it was dangerous.
And I remember
it was dangerous if you got married.
Yeah, it was so dangerous. I moved back to Massachusetts, and we stayed there for.
What happened to you when you were here?
Actually, nothing. But it was this. I was hanging out with her the same summer of Summer of Sam. It was 1977.
Wow. So were you kind of wishing that Sam sort of found this woman?
No. We're getting along fine at that point. But Summer of Sam. It was the same summer that Elvis died and Groucho Marx died.
And wow.
That was a tough one on all of us. That
and I just
trifecta.
Couldn't find work.
What were you looking to do?
Well, we were looking to settle down in New York and find work.
Wait, is this a job interview for him?
I was trying to get a job in advertising, actually, and I couldn't. And I moved to Massachusetts and got a job in advertising in a week.
So when you were writing, Bill wrote some stuff for the National Lampoon, that heralded publication. You were doing that for Massachusetts, or you were living in New York?
I was living in Massachusetts at the time.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Okay, well, anyway, the Tribeca Film Festival is coming up, and there are a couple of movies that I think are notable that are interesting. One is called Stockholm, and it stars one of my favorite actors, Ethan Hawke, and I really give Ethan Hawke a lot of credit because, you know, every once in a while he'll do one of these big budget blockbuster things, but generally he stays in the indie world and does like quality projects.
Well, we talked about the Paul Schrader thing that he's doing, and we're talk about on the television show you just mentioned.
And that movie is
First Reformed,
Reformed, where he plays an ex-priest or something.
No, he's a current priest. He's just
grappling. Stockholm is about a bank robbery that takes place in Stockholm in the early 1970s. Speaking about the 70s, and it is where the term Stockholm syndrome came from, and it's supposed to be very interesting. It looks good. It's another movie I like. You can get tickets. You can go to, you know, TribecaFilmFestival.org, I believe, or you can just Google Tribeca Film Festival, and, you know, you see how you can get tickets. Another one that looks good is called Blue Night. It stars Sarah Jessica Parker, and she is Bill McCuddy's groaning. She's receives bad news. She's a woman who receives life-changing news from her doctor.
And, her husband's gay?
No, it's about her health. And,
her series is canceled?
Her series is canceled.
Her series divorce is canceled. That's funny. Here's one that Bill Brigoli and Bill McCuddy, and I think you, Mike, too, would like. It's a documentary. It's called Bathtubs Over Broadway. I can't wait to see this. It is about – it's a writer from – I think it's one of the writers on – it's either Letterman or maybe Kimmel. Anyway, he uncovered this whole world of industrial musicals that are done for companies like General Electric and IBM, where they're industrial films, but they're musicals that they're shown at these corporate events, and they hire like singers and dancers, and they're hysterically funny. They're not meant to be funny, but they're just.
Did famous people like Sondheim and stuff do them? Or
no, I don't know. But it just it looks like one of these things where these musicals are just so fucking terrible. You know, and you're only seeing them if you're in the stockholders.
Springtime for Hitler.
If you're only in the stockholders meeting and they're showing you, like, we put a film
That's
together
funny.
About our new Alcoa's new aluminum that, you know, and he uncovered a whole world of 40 years of these industrial musicals. It sounds hysterical. So this, I'm really, and isn't that
it's
like,
shiny and it bends and it's everybody's friend.
Like,
it's Alcoa.
Alcoa's new. I know. Well, there was a movie that came out many years ago that I loved where they showed all these 1950s propaganda films that they showed to kids in high school about, like, how they shouldn't do drugs and proper dating etiquette and, like, how they
duck and cover.
They shouldn't have, dating rituals and stuff. So, anyway, this just looks – I love offbeat shit like this.
There's another doc that's opening there, isn't there, Neil, about Gilda Radner?
Yes, that's the opening night selection. It's called Love Gilda.
That documentary in particular is a friend of mine directed that.
Well, Alan Zweibel is behind that.
Alan Zweibel is a buddy of mine and former writer for Saturday Night Live and was very close to Gilda Radner and will be a guest on this podcast. He has a new book coming out. And we're going to have him in the next few weeks. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to that a lot. I think that's a great opening. What a great opening doc for the Tribeca Film Festival, because she was so identified with Saturday Night Live and so such a New Yorker in that regard.
Your favorite, Ewan McGregor, is going to be in a movie called Zoe that's playing at the Tribeca Film Festival. It's a futuristic kind of thing. Christina Hendricks from Mad Men, since we spoke about Mad Men earlier with John Hamm. She's in a movie called Egg. That looks interesting to me. There's a movie about a comedian played by Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who I really like, called All About Nina, and that looks interesting. There is another documentary with everybody you could possibly think of from Broadway called Every Act of Life, and it's about the life of the playwright Terrence McNally, who is a Broadway staple here and has written plays for like 30, 40 years for the Broadway.
Wow, that'll make $5.
Here's what I want to see. There's a movie called In the Soup, and this movie premiered at Cannes like about 25, 30 years ago, and it's one of the very first movies that Steve Buscemi was in. And they lost the print of the movie. It got really great. Now, people loved the movie, and they lost the movie. So for 30 years, nobody saw this movie. And apparently Steve Buscemi, it's one of his first movies, and he's really good in it, and nobody could find the thing. Somebody uncovered a print of this thing, and it's going to have its premiere at the Tribeca Film Festival, and I'm looking forward to see that.
Well, that's an amazing transition to this topic, which is, Mike, did you see this morning that they released the list of Cannes movies this year? And it looks,
and then Netflix pulled out, sure.
And Netflix is completely out. And talk about a movie that hasn't been seen for 30 years because they...
Well, Netflix pulled out because the president of Cannes said that movies that are not going to have a theatrical release in France will not be allowed to be in competition. And Netflix did not want to show their films that are not in competition. And the reason is because... in France, there's a rule that any movie that plays theatrically cannot be released for 36 months on, a platform like Netflix. So it immediately disqualifies it from getting theatrical release or being in competition.
Why would anybody have a rule like that?
Well, let's do the math here. It seems like it's pointed at Netflix because they're concerned.
It's clearly pointed at Netflix.
Yeah, and this is ridiculous because Netflix has had like five or six movies in consideration there or out of competition. And the most interesting one is the Orson Welles Other Side of the Mountain that has been in development forever. Peter Bogdanovich came in and re-edited it, and they actually got it up and running into a real movie. They used Welles' notes and tried to do everything that this has been in the courts for years. His girlfriend, who says she inherited it, wouldn't let anybody touch it, and finally it was going to premiere at Cannes. And it's not gonna. And it's just ridiculous.
By the way, if you want to see some movie stars in person, there's some Tribeca Talks where you can get tickets to. There's one where Bradley Cooper and Robert De Niro, you could see them in person talk to each other. And there's another one with Alexander Payne, who did two of my all-time favorite movies, one being Election and one being Sideways. And he also did that horrible movie, Downsizing, which came out
Downsizing.
Oh, you're the one. And you
like Downsizing? What did you possibly like about that movie? Did you
see
Downsizing?
A lot of things. Yeah. I like the premise. I like the idea. I like what they did with it. I like that it did some things I didn't expect it to do. I thought it was fun.
What did you think of it, Bill Bregoli?
First 20 minutes were fun, and then, like the rest of us, it just went off.
Missed opportunity, but if you like Payne, he's got a great book about all the movies he's made and sort of think of it like a DVD extra narration track, but a book. Remember books?
If you like Payne, do you mean the film is painful?
If you like Alexander Payne, he's got a book out that I can recommend.
That Tracy Flick character, man, that was genius. Genius in Election. I just love that. Had a great movie. Matthew Broderick. If you tell you, you want to rent something great or get see it on Netflix, talking about Netflix, Matthew Broderick, Reese Witherspoon, who else is in that?
That's all you need.
Yeah, right. Fill me up.
Isn't Chris Klein in that?
Fill me up. Chris Klein, very good. What do we have for Bill?
Some classic film you may not have seen.
That's right, Bill. It's a new car. It's the Mercury Montego.
Mike, Neil's paying absolutely no attention to you, but thank you for being here.
Anyway,
hey, I want to bring up my video pick of the week, and then we'll wrap this thing up, I guess.
And let's tell them what we're talking about next week. We're talking about Disobedience next week. You know, it's a lesbian love story amongst the Orthodox Jewish community in London.
It has Rachel on Rachel Sex.
Starring
I'm not talking about Jennifer Aniston.
Rachel Weisz.
Right, right.
and Rachel McAdams. And, you know, I know we've seen a lot of these lesbian, orthodox, Jewish community movies in London, but I think this one will stand out amongst the hundreds of movies.
They took the songs out, so it's not a musical anymore, so that's good. we'll talk about that next week. I'm hooked right now on Mrs. McCuddy and I are hooked on something on AMC called The Terror, which stars Jared Harris.
From Mad Men.
From Mad Men. We've been talking about that sort of pull through in today's podcast. Thanks for noticing. It's about two ships that try and discover the Northwest Passage, and they sail very close to the North Pole, and the water freezes, as can happen. And they start to get surrounded by a giant polar bear, they think.
Oh, God.
Or a spirit.
Oh,
and
no.
They get...
Or the spirit of a cold polar bear.
Or the spirit of a cold polar bear.
It's
just really amazing.
Rampage,
I can't tell you.
It's lost.
It's been... Everyone who sees it likes it, so I'm sure Neil will weigh in shortly.
You remember the giant polar bear in Lost? Do we all remember the giant polar bear? Mike, I'm sure you remember the giant polar bear in Lost.
Well, I live with the giant polar bear.
the one that did those Coca-Cola commercials.
So, you know, if you miss some of these things, as Bill McCuddy said earlier, that grown-ups don't go to the movies that much anymore, but you could see them on. They wait to see them on when they come on demand or DVD or streaming on
Well,
Netflix.
You want grown-up movies. New streaming this week, Phantom Thread, which jumps the stitch as far as I'm concerned, but got a lot of love at the Oscars. All the Money in the World is the J. Paul Getty thing, but this is the one that they called everybody back and took...
Replaced Kevin Spacey with Christopher Plummer.
At this performance, the part of Kevin Spacey will be played by Christopher Plummer. The Greatest Showman, which came and kind of went with Hugh Jackman. I liked it a lot. We had tea with Hugh, and he couldn't have been lovelier. He practically,
you at that tea, Mike?
Practically sat in Neil Rose's lap.
Who would you have tea with?
Jackman. It was Hugh Jackman.
At the Whitby Hotel.
Nobody invites me to tea.
Yeah, sorry. And finally, Molly's Game, which I wanted to be better than it was, but is still kind of watchable, is also new this week. So
you liked Molly's Game, didn't you, Bill?
I start with Bill. I think we both agreed on it. It could have been better. And it has the longest voiceover narration probably in movie history.
It's a book on tape that's read to you, basically. Yeah.
It's about it's a true story, right? About a woman who ran...
My brother-in-law played in Molly's Game.
Played by Jessica Chastain, who ran a high-stakes poker game. First in Vegas, and then it went to New York, or first in California, then...
California and then New York.
Right, and they had really big celebrities that... Well, one of them played in the movie by the guy that you love from that.
Michael Cera.
But in real life, such people as... Who played in the game in real life, Bill?
Pete Sampras. The Michael Cera character is based on Tobey Maguire. It had people from sports. It had people from movies. Those people are sort of kind of represented.
So Jessica
in this
Chastain,
movie.
As always, is very good in it. Kevin Costner's in it playing her dad. That's kind of.
Idris Elba works for the world's largest one man lawyers firm in New York because he's in a giant office in a giant firm and we never see anybody else.
Didn't we just see a comedy with Idris Elba the other day? There was. What was that crazy? Was that Idris Elba? What was that comedy where. He gets stuck. The company sends him down to like Mexico or something like that.
No, that's not Idris Elba.
I'm sorry,
that was David Oyelowo.
Well, that was David Oyelowo.
Mixing up black people again?
Yeah. Okay, we'll cut that out of the show.
Maybe not.
Mike, does that stay in or does it come out?
It should stay in.
There you go.
My. You know, I love how on Twitter people go, oh, we love how you make fun of Neil.
Oh, yeah. I want to give a shout out to, we got a great tweet the other day. Let me read this to you. It's from...
Whenever we get one, we read it.
No, but this is a really great tweet. So the guy goes, this is what Mike Sarge is referring to. He goes, don't ever stop recording this podcast, ! Easily the most entertaining and informative movie/TV podcast produced today. Makes me laugh how you guys always make fun of poor Neil. So to this gentleman, I want to tell
that's
you that...
That's our gentleman, that's your wife.
That a most entertaining podcast and then put random...
Let me tell you that Bill McCuddy, who moonlights as a stand-up comedian, from time to time. That's one of my joys of the show is when people bust on me. It's not poor Neil. I actually enjoy that. A good laugh is fun, and even if it's
that's true.
At my
expense. We're going to be putting the best of Bill Makes Fun of Neil. And...
Yes, that's our next show. It's going to be highlights.
Spoiler alert.
Anyway, so that's about it.
Mike, where can we find you?
You can find me. I have a website, lifeislikesciencefiction.com, and you can find me on Twitter, Mike on Screen.
Mike on Screen. Bill Bregoli is still not on social media. One day.
Yes,
one day
I'm going to create.
As soon as Mark Zuckerberg gets his story straight,
I'm going to create a Facebook fan page for you, Bill Bregoli.
I actually have a Facebook page.
You have a Facebook page?
I am on Facebook, yeah.
Seriously?
Wow. Yeah, Bill McCuddy and I are Facebook friends.
We are.
Wow. Well, this is news. You could find Bill McCuddy at
Bill McCuddy.
The cult of
not
Bill.
Too tough.
And you could find me at Neil Rose and Apples. And do tune in next week to hear all about the lesbian love story set amongst the Orthodox Jewish community in London with Rachel Weisz and Rachel McAdams. It's a show you don't want to miss. So
in my world, that's obedience, not disobedience.
Anyway, thanks for sitting around movies, talking movies with us.
We're drunk.
For Bill Bregoli.
Yes.
We're sitting on movies. He's got some DVDs under.
Actually, before we go,
I'm really
excited to see the new Woody Allen movie. Are they ever going to release that thing?
That's one of the other things that got pulled from Cannes.
Is that going to be released, Bill Bregoli?
I have no idea.
It's Amazon, you know?
Yeah.
Bill, you know.
No, they're not. Well,
are we ever? Is it going to be like "I Love You, Daddy"? Like nobody's ever going to see it unless
see it on Amazon.
No, it's going to get released. There are too many big people in it. Even though Timothy Chalamet claims he wished he hadn't made it now.
Yeah, well, they're all saying that. Well, anyway,
a lot of dingo's kidneys.
Anyway, for Bill Bregoli,
yes, sir,
and Bill McCuddy.
I promise this is the end.
And Mike Sargent. Say goodbye, Mike. Say goodnight, Dick, as they used to say on Rowan and Martin's Laugh. And I'm Neil Rosen. And thanks for sitting around talking movies.
Another hip reference from Neil.
We'll sit around talking movies as Bill makes fun of me again, and I'm enjoying it. And we'll sit around talking movies with you again next week.